Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, man. How are you?
Thank you for joining us, by the way. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to give us this relevant information that you're going to share today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
But before we get started on the subject matter, I was hoping that you would be able to give us a little bit of a backstory of your life and how it led up to you being the founder of Citizens in Recovery and how, you know, being a certified life coach and a empowerment coach, how all this took place.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So, I got sober in, 1994 in San Francisco. I was living in the Tenderloin. Things were not going well for me. And, I had been trying to get sober over the past, I think it was about 5 years since I was 21.
When you say trying to get sober, were you just like saying, no, I don't want to drink? Or were you going through,
going to meetings.
Okay.
I was, from the time I was 17, I had been sent by the courts to go to meetings.
Okay.
So I had already had some exposure to that.
Okay.
And, I'll never forget the first time I ever went to an AA meeting. And I was with my buddy and we got really stoned in the parking lot. And then we went into the meeting and I remember listening to these people and it was mainly like old people, you know, talking about their problems. And I was so high, but I could just relate to everything they were saying, you know, and my buddy was, you know, we ended up leaving there and he was like, could you believe what those people were saying? And I was kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, I know, really. Even though deep down inside
yeah.
Oh my God, those are my people. I need their help, you know?
Got you.
But, I'm living in San Francisco and I'm just so depressed, so down. And it was just time. It was my time. And I made the conscious decision that I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go back to meetings and I'm going to really do it this time. And I'm going to do it. The main thing that happened for me while I was, you know, going in and out was the one day at a time cliche that I constantly heard. And it really made sense to me at that time. It was like, okay, I got to just get through today. And if I can get
Those clichés stick sometime, right?
They do, man. They really do. And that's what it was. And that's what I still tell people today. You know, that's my biggest thing because, and as we talk about the attachment trauma, it really comes down to one moment at a time.
Wow.
Because we really have to be present in this moment because I feel like attachment trauma really ties into our backstory and what happened to us.
Absolutely.
And that's what shapes our beliefs about us. And that's what shapes how we interact and behave with people.
Right.
And if we're shaping that based on the past, then we're not actually here in the present.
Okay.
So,
got you.
So that's really what I try to push with people is one day at a time, one moment at a time. Be here right now.
Great. You know? Now, when we talk about attachment trauma, for those of us who might not be, familiar with that that terminology, would you be able to give like in some words just give a definition of attachment trauma in your own words?
Yeah, so I'm not like a an academic,
right?
I'm also not a clinician. I'm very upfront about that, you know.
Right,
I've worked in treatment centers for about 10 years and run treatment centers and worked with a lot of great clinicians, but I've studied a lot about it and I've learned a lot about it and I've done
and you have personal life experience about it.
And I have personal life experience.
Which is very important.
Right. So attachment trauma is really about the bond between a child and their primary caregiver.
Okay.
And when that bond is disrupted or when it's broken, how does that child respond when the child and the primary caregiver are brought back together?
Right,
and what they found in this study was that there are Originally, there were three different attachment styles that happened. One was secure, one was anxious, and one was avoidant. And then later they found that there was a fourth one, and that's disorganized. Okay. So based on the interaction and the bond between the child and the primary caregiver, when they get separated, they're creating some sort of response is created within the child, and they react in a certain way. And when they're brought back with their caregiver, that attachment style is then noticeable.
Right. So, so when you say separated, like say maybe the parent goes to prison, or are you talking about that kind of separation?
It could be numerous. So with this study, basically they brought these kids into a room where they were playing games. I think they were playing games or something like that.
Right.
And the parents were in the room with them as they were playing. Mm-hmm. And then they took the parents out of the room.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm with you.
Right. And then brought a stranger in. And the children would start crying or, you know, whatever their response was. And then when they brought the parents back in, that's when they identified how the children reacted to the parents coming back in.
Oh, okay. So that's the beginning of like this. That's where the study,
that's how the study takes place to determine.
Right. To determine. Right.
And I may not be perfect on this.
Sure. No, I get it. I get it totally.
But that's the basic concept, you know? Right. So that is really the basis of what I do with my work, because as I started to learn about this, I started to see what my issues were and
personally,
how my behaviors and my interactions and my core belief systems about myself, how that was all shaped based on my relationship with my mother,
father. Right. So it's a process of you going back, like thinking back to your childhood and realizing, you know, maybe your parents or your mother wasn't fulfilling. There was some type of void in the relationship. Maybe you know, she didn't give you the love, or she wasn't physically there.
She wasn't there.
Those types of, yeah.
Right.
Got you.
Right. So over time, and here's the thing. I was going to AA. I was doing the steps. I was working my ass off trying to like figure out what is the cause, what's really going on, you know, with me and causing this upset, you know, and then going to therapists and telling them my story. And I spent years telling people my story about what happened to me and them feeling sorry for me, but never getting any kind of solution out of it, never feeling any sense of empowerment.
Right.
You know? So it was, so these core beliefs that I had about myself were still there.
I'm not good enough. Nobody wants to be around me. I'm not lovable. Yeah, I'm not. I can't be loved.
Right.
All those things stuck into your core beliefs, and
because I was actually being validated by my therapist in what had happened to me.
Wow.
So I never was able to actually figure out that, hey, what happened to you was just the cause, okay? But then it was a matter of figuring out how to get myself to believe that that doesn't make me, my identity is not tied to that. So just because my father was never around, just because my father said things to me that made me feel like I'm not good enough, I'm never gonna be good enough.
Right.
And because my mother was never there, I saw my mother once a year my entire life.
Wow.
So maybe twice a year. But I made so much meaning out of those things. Mm-hmm. And I made those mean that I'm not lovable, I'm not good enough. So whenever I came up on for a job offer, or whenever I came up for, you know, in a competition of some sort, I never felt confident in myself. I wasn't qualified.
I know it would probably definitely interfere with any type of relationship that you try to carry on productively with anybody, just, right. you know, speaking back to back and forth, gaining a friend, you know, right. having a significant other, all yeah. those things, you know, when you don't, when your core beliefs are so negative and so beat down, or it's right. so deep in your, you know, in your psychology that
yes.
you just can't perform, you can't get what you want. And personally, I believe that we're beings that crave relationships, you know, and to be,
yeah.
you know, to want something and just connection. Not be able to get it, you know,
yeah.
just connection. Such a,
that's all we want. Yeah. We want connection, right?
Right.
To feel whole, to feel, you know, like we matter,
right?
You know, that we are loved. You know, what I learned was that there are two fundamental things that we feel that can cause us to not be able to move forward. It's either one, that we feel that we aren't good enough or we aren't qualified,
right?
Or two, that we aren't lovable.
That's deep.
And those could be combined as well. Yeah. Both of those feelings.
You know, I think about that, man, and just being stuck where you want, you know, you want to carry on a good relationship with somebody, or you want to, you know, just to be able to be real when you communicate and express yourself, and just yeah. having those, that's such an obstacle, you know, like doing this right now, you know, I'm nervous, you know, and I was yeah. very nervous at the beginning of this, but sure. it kind of goes away as we're speaking, I get more comfortable and we're communicating with each other,
right.
but to have that initial fear or that initial uncomfortableness at a long period of time,
yeah.
a long lasting period of time, just would be devastating when it happens to you every day, over and over again, every time you attempt
exactly.
to connect with somebody. That's so devastating.
Yeah. And that's where the work really comes in of releasing those yeah. feelings. So trauma, if you've ever, I don't know if you know anything about Bessel van der Kolk and his book about The Body Keeps the Score. That's the name of his book.
Okay.
He is the preeminent, I call him the godfather. He's the godfather of trauma research.
Trauma, okay. Right.
You know? So he talks about trauma being held in the body, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when he talks about that, when we experience trauma, whether we see it, whether we hear it or feel it, whatever it might be, our nervous system reacts to that, okay?
So it's physical.
It's a physical response.
Right.
It may not show itself.
Right.
But our limbic system is actually responding to that specific event, whatever it might be.
I think it's kind of like your body is like surging for this like fight or flight type of reaction
exactly.
at those moments, right?
Yes, that's what the limbic system is all about.
Yeah.
Fight or flight or freeze, okay?
Yeah.
So when we experience any kind of trauma, those hormones, cortisol and other stress hormones,
right.
are released into our body through the vagal nerve, okay? So
right.
Stephen Porges talks about vagal tone and vagal theory. He's the one that created this whole theory
okay.
about how the energy gets passed through the body, okay? And then you hold that energy in your body. If you don't resolve that,
no outlet, right?
There's no outlet,
right, yeah.
then you're gonna hold that energy in your body, and that can cause disease, that can cause all kinds of sickness, it can cause additional stress,
right?
And then you don't have the coping skills to be able to deal with stress as it comes to you.
That's tough, man, because I'm telling you, just you and I discussing this right now has like my shoulders tense, man. Like,
right.
I'm
right.
feeling it, you know, a little bit like how somebody, you know, not able to like have
exactly.
any release of all that tension and that
right.
nowhere to go, but it's just looping and like circling inside your body. That's
exactly. And that's
tough, man.
That's why they say somatic experiencing and you know, these different types of modalities that actually go into the body and help to release that energy.
Right.
That's what it's all about. So the, if you experience trauma, that incident is never going to be gone, right? You're right. Always going to remember it.
Now, that's one thing, if you don't mind me interrupting, that's one thing I'd like to talk about too. When I think about trauma, okay,
right.
It usually in my mind, it goes to an event or something right. that takes place. Like when I have a very close person to me that was a 9/11 survivor and,
right.
You know, the trauma that came after seeing all that. But that's not necessarily the case when you talk about trauma. It doesn't have to be around a specific event, right? It could be an accumulation of a repetitive thing.
So let me just tell you that literally this morning, I experienced the recurring trauma that I've been living with my entire life with my family.
Okay.
Okay. So it doesn't have to be one specific event.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a catastrophe.
Right.
Or some tragic event. It can be very, very subtle. There's what they call little T traumas and things like neglect and abandonment. Those things are the little T
right.
traumas. They're not these huge catastrophic mm-hmm. events. They're these very subtle things that happen throughout your life.
But still
so
powerful.
You don't even realize are happening.
Right.
And that's actually going into your nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's creating these beliefs. You create coping mechanisms to deal with it. And those coping mechanisms are usually maladaptive.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're not really doing the job.
They're not really right. helping you. And if anything, they're really probably hindering you a little bit more. Or they're
exactly.
just creating what you talked about, that circular, you know, right. it just keeps cycling. So that's where they talk about your past. If you're thinking about your past actually can become your future.
Right.
Because you're living in that story and it's cycling through and it's becoming your future because that's the only way you know how to deal with it.
And if you don't really know how to deal with it in a productive way, in a progressive way, it's easy to see why somebody would use drugs and alcohol just to get out of that situation, at least temporarily, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just give me some freaking relief.
Let me out of this for a minute, yeah. man. Yeah.
Because that's yeah. your medicine. That just gets rid of it, you know?
Right.
So we have to figure out, and also we have to figure out how to change those core beliefs.
Right.
So for
that's
me.
That's one thing, real quick, I want to get into that too. Like, let's.
Yeah.
So that now we have an explanation on what exactly, not exactly, but what attachment trauma is. We're familiarizing the audience with that. Now,
yeah.
I'd like to talk about the healing process. And, you know, and I think about when I think about attachment and trauma, or attachment trauma rather, one thing that stands out is that fortunately for us, the brain is powerful. I mean, you are able to fix a lot of things, even if it's in your core belief. There has to be a process that takes place that makes you think differently, makes
yeah.
you want to choose communication, makes you want to choose relationships, even though those things might be very hard because you've been isolated for so long.
Right,
you live a life of isolation, and now you know you're trying to make a choice to express and to reach out and try to gain relationships. So, could
right.
you speak about some of the healing process a little bit?
Yeah, so it's like you said, the brain can change. So the brain is malleable,
right.
which means that you can mold it. You can create new neural pathways within your brain. You can create new connections and new
yeah.
thought patterns. That's basically what we create. So these coping mechanisms that we create, they basically become habits.
Okay.
So we have these habits that we create. So when A occurs, B is the response, right?
Right.
And that's our habit. That's what happens.
That's what we do repeatedly over and over again.
Right.
Right.
That's where addiction kind of ties in, right?
Yes.
So if we can catch what the habit is, identify what the habit is, and then change that habit to something that's more positive and more reinforcing and stick to it, then we can actually create a new habit and let go of that old belief. Wow. So our beliefs actually can form these habits. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example. So as a kid, my father always tried to push me to be better. Right. Okay. He was always trying to push me to be better. I took it to mean that I wasn't good enough, because no matter what I did, no matter what success I had, he was always identifying somebody else or something else that right. was better.
And that was you feel like you're doing your best. And instead of getting like, oh man, great job. Yeah. Like, come on, you can do better than that. Or right. reaching for this, look this how guy? He does it. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I was a really good swimmer. Okay. And I would win my races all the time. Right. Right. And then I would swim other races and I would get maybe second or third, you know, so, and I would set records and I would go to my dad and I'd be like, did you see that? I set this record, blah, blah, blah. And he'd be like, yeah, but what about this guy? He actually won 4 races and he got best swimmer of the meet.
Wow.
And then it just crushed me, you know? Absolutely. And there was some stuff when I was a kid that he said to me that was really like really at the core that made me feel like I can never let anybody know that I'm good at anything. Mm-hmm. So whenever people compliment me,
you don't take it.
I can't take a compliment.
You can't take it from heart. You can't take it
from heart. I find the downside of it.
Right.
And I say, yeah, but, you know, thanks, but, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
So what happened was I started to create this belief system that I'm not qualified. I'm not good enough. I'm never going to be good enough. And as a child, I created this coping mechanism to deal with that, right?
Right.
And I would just shut down, basically. I wouldn't do anything. But at some point, that stopped working for me, like in high school, as I mm-hmm. became an adolescent. Mm-hmm. And then when something came at me where I was being confronted with this feeling of not being good enough.
Or maybe challenged.
Or being challenged. Yeah. I became angry. So then I started punching lockers. I started getting angry and trying to intimidate people. Right. Because that was my way of dealing
with this
feeling of inadequacy.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And then I could show my power. But then what happens with that is, you know, people back away at first.
Yeah.
But then at some point, people don't want to deal with you.
They don't want to mess with you because you've already, you're labeled as like a short-tempered, you know, you can't get through to him. Or you don't want to deal with him. He might snap out on you or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So that became my coping mechanism. And I was dealing with that in sobriety. Yeah. So everything that I was being confronted with in sobriety was, I was getting angry all the time. Even though I was doing my step work and I was being accountable and being humble and
you still
being
have this,
service.
You still have this way of reacting.
Yeah.
This negative reaction whenever confronted or challenged.
So I had to confront that belief system about myself that I wasn't good enough. I had to release that somatically mm-hmm. and integrate it into my body so that I could actually feel like, okay, when that identify that feeling of inadequacy, when it comes up, which it still comes up, but now I deal with it in a different way. I'm able to
recognize it. You see it happening.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing. And
I'm also
dealing with it eternally kind of.
I'm able to realize it's not real.
Yeah.
That's the old story coming in.
How important is that for people that are going through that to be able to realize what's happening with them and be able to deal with it properly?
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're doing this, right?
Yeah.
To give people that information.
We're looking for this justification to make us feel like we're good enough, right? Yeah,
exactly.
When the reality is we're already good enough. We're already whole. We don't need the justification. We need to justify ourselves that we are enough. It doesn't matter what our parents told us, you know? And I used to minimize my story. I used to make it mean like, oh, well, I came from, you know, my dad was successful and, you know, I didn't have a poor background, blah, blah, blah. And I justify all this stuff. And it doesn't matter what your background is, you know? It's how you respond. Trauma is about how an individual responds to an event. It's not about the event itself.
It's all about your response and your reaction and how, you know, regardless of, regardless of what the event may be, how you can deal with it in a positive, productive way that suits you, that helps you move forward.
And I've been in a way that keeps you secure.
Exactly. And you being a life coach, when I think of life coaching, it's all about moving forward, right?
Right.
Creating your goals, moving forward, you know,
So what's the story that's holding you back from moving forward?
What's the obstacle that we have to get over?
Yeah. What are you telling yourself?
Yeah.
You know, because we can come up with 1,000 excuses for why something's not working.
Exactly.
Okay. So what is it that we need to do to change? What are you telling yourself that's stopping you from continuing? You know, why do you
deal with it? Let's deal with it. Let's get through it and let's move forward. And like, let's, you know, be the person that you really want to be.
Right. Because that's where resilience comes in. You know, we can get through anything, you know,
right.
We can get through loss. We can get through failure. That's why I always tell people, you failed. That's awesome. Because that is a learning lesson right there.
And I think that's a message that's being, you know, from whenever I was a child, failure was such a horrific thing to experience. And now I believe in general, the message is, hey, fail, use it as a learning lesson, you know, use it to your advantage. And the next try, you're going to be that much better.
Right. You know, I coach kids soccer, right? Yeah. I coach my kids soccer team. And they're all concerned about who's winning, who's winning. We'll do little scrimmages.
Yeah.
And I told them, you know, I said, I don't care who gets the most goals. I care more about who gets the most passes because I'm trying to teach them the fundamentals of the game.
Right.
So instead, they're not focused on winning. I mean, they're still focused on winning. Now they're just like, who got the most passes? Who got, you know, and it's like, gee, kids, don't you? But it's reshaping how they see things, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and, definitely.
And that's the most critical part is making mistakes, failing, learning the lesson, and then moving forward with that information, you know? And that's how we develop this resilience and this strength to keep pushing forward.
Eric, this is really powerful, man. Unfortunately, we're coming to the end of this, but thank you so much for giving us all this great information. Is it possible for you to leave some information on how people can reach you if they want to know more or be able to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So you can go to citizensinrecovery.com. That's my website.
All right.
At citizensinrecovery.com. Is my Instagram handle.
Great. Okay,
or
great.
Whatever you call
you.
It, you know?
I get it.
Facebook.com/citizensinrecovery.
Great. Okay. That's awesome.
Those are my main ones.
Yeah. So thanks again, Eric, man. Thank you so much for sharing all this great information and giving us a little bit of your story, man. It means a lot to me. And I know it means a lot to the people that are listening. So
thank you, David. And also, David, I want to let you know. You killed it.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that, Eric, man. I appreciate it, man. Thank
you
so much. Hey, guys, you know, if this podcast meant something to you, you know, if you're a parent, if you are in recovery, or if you're suffering from addiction right now, or if you're suffering from the same kind of issues that Eric and I were discussing, y'all, he just gave you the information how to reach him. If you need somebody to talk to, you can always reach us at themosthighshow.com. We want to talk to you. We want to hear what you're saying. And please, you know, if you're able to tell your friends, or if you know somebody that might be going through something, give them the information about the Most High app. Download the app. Go to Google Play Store, download the app, and man, we're here to be helpful, and we're all just a group of people that are in the same situation, man. We're all the same. So thank you guys so much. Thanks, Eric, again. Peace.
Thanks,
this was the Most High Show.